Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Håvard Bustnes, and we talk a great deal about why he's located in the middle of Norway. Actually, that's not what we talk about at all. We talk about his new film, Golden Dawn Girls. It's a film about the far right. It's a film about politics. It's a film about ideology and how it takes hold of a community, of a culture, of a nation. This is about, for Håvard, this is about stories. This is about narrative, and in some respects, about the worst forms of racism and what, in fact, is kind of happening all over the world. And so, it's for Håvard. It's about evil. It's about violence and worldview, and it's about truth. And we get into some of what's happening coming out of Europe and what's been happening for the last few years. It's about ideas, and it's about subverting those ideas. And as in Håvard's own words, it's about the banality of evil. So do stay tuned for a fascinating and intriguing documentary called Golden Dawn Girls, coming up at Hot Docs. A lot of D's going on there. Stay tuned. You're going to want to catch the film at Hot Docs, which is coming up in the very near future. And as the website will tell you, Golden Dawn Girls doc.com, coming soon to a theater near you. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and writing, and face2facelive.ca for more interviews there. You can also support the work that I do through Patreon if you're interested. Coming right up, Håvard Bustnes talking about his new film, Golden Dawn Girls.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest here with us today, all the way from Norway. In fact, I think he's going to actually tell us maybe from all the way from the middle of nowhere. And our guest today, Håvard Bustnes, is here with us today to talk about his new film, Golden Dawn Girls. Håvard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. Calling from Trondheim in the middle of Norway. As you said, middle of nowhere, far, far away.
And Håvard, is there a reason for why you're there? Do you live there? Are you shooting? Is this where you go to do some editing? What's going on for you today in the middle of nowhere?
So I here is my home. I live here with my family in this small city in Norway. It's a city with around 200 people. It's
wow.
A great place to live for being a filmmaker.
Wow, that's really interesting. A city of 200 people. That's
Sorry. No, it's not that small. 200,000.
Oh, 200,000. Okay. Very good.
Still small.
Okay, that's a little bigger. Yeah. Because I live in about the same size. I live in a town about the same size, and it's interesting that you say it's a good place for a filmmaker. And I'd love to love to hear more about why that is. But I would imagine it cuts down on relational management, I would think. Thanks for joining us today. And first, I want to say right out of the gate, congratulations on your film. It's I mean, how do I say that it was a great film and yet so deeply disturbing at the same time?
Yeah, I know. It's a rough film to see, but I think, unfortunately, it's very relevant and an important film. But I hope you could see some humor as well. It's not deadly serious all the time.
No, for sure, and I think you're right. I mean, it's a real... I mean, to say that it's a journey, any great film is. Any film is a journey, I suppose, and there's several different narratives that you follow throughout, and I'm fascinated to hear more about how you even gained access, you know, to this group of people and how you were able to have the conversations that you had and to reveal some of the things that you did. So can you give us a little bit of an overview? Because Golden Dawn Girls sounds really interesting, you know, as a title. And if you haven't been to the website to read anything about the film, give us the quick synopsis and logline, and I'll leave it to you to sort of unpack it for our listeners.
Yeah. So Golden Dawn Girls, it's a documentary from Greece. I started this project in 2013. At that moment, Golden Dawn has just became the third biggest party in Greece. Golden Dawn is this really fascist party. They do this Sieg Heil and have a symbol very close to a Nazi symbol. And I learned in 2013 that this party just became like the third biggest in the parliament. I think it was around 400,000 people voting for them. And I was really shocked, because for me, Greece had been this holiday place where I drink Oso and go to the beach and
right.
Talk to a lot of friendly people. And I really wanted to find out how this could happen. So we decided to go there. And my first idea was to make a film about how they raised their kids.
Right.
To get their worldview, this worldview of hate and this Nazi ideas. So that was my first idea. But when we arrived, suddenly all the men, the leaders of the Golden Dawn, were arrested in the beginning of end of 2013. And suddenly we were in the middle of a political and a personal drama.
Right.
So all the men were arrested, and then we decided to make a film about the women. The women who took the control of the party, who had to run the party after the men were arrested. So that's the starting point of this film. So we decided to follow, and then we got access to the daughter of the boss, Urania. She is young, in her early 20s. She was studying psychology, and she had to take charge of this party when her father were arrested. And then we have another woman called Daphne. She is the mother of one parliament member, and Jenny, she's the wife of another parliament member.
So you find yourself kind of going with this intention of making one film, and it's really interesting because you do bring that whole idea of parenting and child rearing in that, you know, beautifully disturbing scene near the end of the film, the baptism. I mean, it reminded me a little of The Godfather, that scene of that cross-cutting back and forth between, you know, what is and what will be, you know, the way things are and this potential for new life and so on in this new life. And it's just, it's so deeply disturbing. So you go there to make that film, and then you find yourself thrown into this other story. Is that kind of how it played out?
Exactly. I first had this idea about this film about how they raised their kids, and suddenly I were in the middle of this huge drama, because this were like in the focus all over the world. There were news reportages in CNN and everywhere about this arrest. And we were suddenly in the middle of all this and had this very special access, because Golden Dawn is famous to be very close to the party, of course. They are very skeptical against the journalists. And they're also famous to be violent against the journalists. So we were in the middle of all this, and we had to just make this film.
Hovart, was it a conscious decision to insert yourself into the film? I I think several times, I mean, we hear you asking some questions. I think you opened pretty much right after the establishing shot, within a minute or so, you asked the question, whatever happened to Greece? I'm pretty sure that was you. But we see you holding the, boom mic, and you're right. There are some moments. There are some moments of comedy. There's no doubt. It's dark comedy, to be sure. The contradictions and the irony and the, it's just it runs so deep. But did was that a conscious choice, or did that just kind of happen as you, started to follow the story?
So the decision to include me in the film came very late in the process. I think it was in the last month of editing. So because we saw that it was necessary to include the process, because when we first watched the film without me, it was really hard to watch. Hmm. Because and we had some test screenings with some French and some with international audience, and some of the people in this workshop, they couldn't watch the film. They had to walk out of the room, and that was, especially French and German people had a big problem to watch the film. So it's interesting, because I think Scandinavian filmmakers and maybe French filmmakers is different traditions. So in Scandinavia, we really trust the audience, and I think the audience trust the filmmaker. So it's easier to make subjective films.
Why, Hovard? Why were people walking out? It was just too difficult to watch. They were just stunned by what they were seeing. Right.
Yeah, because it was a film without any. I didn't have that much confrontation. We just watched these women without. Because for me, it's obvious what they do is wrong, of course.
Yes.
And for me, it wasn't necessary to confront them. But then we understood that people who watch the film, they need to have somebody to hold their hand. Because it's too hard to watch this passage for 1.5 hours without anybody else.
Right. Something I find really fascinating, and you know, you make a comment about it. To me, it's obvious that it's wrong, and I mean, isn't that what the meta narrative even about this film is really all about? How do we make these decisions? How do we come to these places where we can cross these ethical lines that so many of us would say are out there, are problematic, are evil, etc. I mean, I love that older man that you end up bumping into basically in the street, who gets quite animated about how he, when he was 8 years old and having to work, make his way through Nazi Germany and so on. And the visceral reaction to say, no, this is wrong, period. There is no discussion. And yet in the film, the Golden Dawn girls, I mean, isn't it Jenny who says that people need to see us as normal people?
Yeah. And that was their goal, of course. So when you make a film about somebody, they have their own agenda.
That's right.
And it became obvious for me that after a while, after we have shot for a year maybe, I saw that they were controlling the film more than I liked, because they can decide what we could film and not film.
Right.
And I was really afraid to be a microphone stand for them, to help them to promote their
interesting
politics.
Yeah, because so I guess you were kind of potentially dancing in both worlds, weren't you? Maybe this is going to become a film about this movement and actually help support it and not critique it.
Exactly, and that was my worst nightmare. So I was thinking about stopping this project. I was not sure if it was ethically right for me to continue this project. And but then that's one of the other reasons why we understood that we had to include me in the film, because I had to confront them, but it was also important to show how they tried to control the film.
And we started
to look at the raw material in the editing process, and we found a lot of interesting material in between the shots when they were discussing between themselves in Greek about me and what they should answer. And that's maybe the most interesting part of the film, because this is a film about how you make up stories, because they want to portray the men as the heroes. They're always the heroes.
And
how they, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's really interesting too. I mean, didn't the men end up spending about 18 months in prison for the length?
Yes, and more, 2 years in custody.
Two years in custody, and it really is fascinating how you show us how the women, sort of these three women, rise to the task of taking over the party and continuing to push it forward and move it forward and continue to disseminate, you know, their messages while these men are in jail. Yeah. And then that day that they're let out, and how, you know, I think you even narrate it and say how the mood immediately shifted and the women's, you know, melted into the background or something along those lines.
Yeah. No, it's true, and fascinating, because in this party, the women should be at home with their kids cooking food, and that's the way they look at the world. But
right.
Of course, when the men were arrested, accused of leading a criminal organization, the women had to be in charge. And it's interesting to see, I think, the party even gets bigger, because the women, they are more human. So I think
right.
easier for them
interesting.
To get voters outside their normal group of
so would you say, Hobart, that had the men not gone to prison, the party would not have grown to the size that it is?
Yeah, maybe. It's hard for me to say, but anyhow, yeah, I think maybe you should suggest, normally the party should be smaller when the leaders are in jail, but they were able to keep it that big and even bigger. So it was fascinating and scary, really scary.
Really scary. So what did happen to Greece, in a sense? Have you landed on that? I mean, obviously we know, many of us have read the stories, have read the news, followed it to some degree, but until you live within the country and the context, I mean, it's almost impossible to really understand. And how do you really stand in somebody else's shoes? And I think that's one of the messages about your film. What I love about your film, Hovard, is it touches on so many issues. I mean, you really did make a film about parenting, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, this is a film about how we raise our kids and the stories we tell and what we pass on to others. And it's deeply troubling when from an ideological perspective, when you hear, and I don't remember who it was, but I think it was near the end of the film, where she makes this blanket claim, you know, I don't really care about others, you know,
yeah.
I'm, and you just wonder how does a political party like that begin when, you know, and I think near the beginning, there's a line too about the Stalinist bitches and I don't care about their opinion. And so you kind of bookend this story where are they really there for the right reasons? Do they really truly believe this stuff?
Yeah, that's the main question for me in the film, and to be honest, it's very hard to understand, because for me it's a big mystery. How is it possible to believe in this kind of ideas, these conspiracy theories about the Jews
right.
controlling the world? It's really crazy, because it's the same ideas that we saw during the Second World War, and today we know so much about what happened that time. So for me, it's a mystery. How is it possible to believe in this? And I really hoped until then that this was something they just said, that I hope that they could distance themselves, especially when the men were arrested. Because these women, they are intelligent, they have read a lot, they have master's degrees, but still, they really believe it. And I think it's a lot about fear. They're afraid.
Right, right.
They feel like they are in a war. And when you are in a war, you can use violence. So they feel they protect themselves. And yeah.
So clearly the nationalism and the socialism and the connections to Nazism come out at the, you know, kind of right out of the gate. And like you say, the logo even for the party, but you really bring that home throughout the film and throughout some of the things they say and so on. But would you say, after spending a significant amount of time with these women, for the most part, I mean, is this so fear for sure, but is it just deeply seated, deeply rooted racism, Hovart? Is this what we're talking
about?
Oh,
yes. It's the worst kind of racism. They talk about the Greek DNA. And
that's right, and so yes. Don't they say, Hovart, it's so great, don't they say that they actually have the DNA of the ancient Greeks?
Yeah. And I think it's more something mystical about this special DNA, because it's crazy. We know, everybody knows that the Greeks have been mixing with a lot of culture during hundreds of years. So it's you cannot talk about the Greek DNA. It doesn't exist, of course not. And but they believe in these kind of stories, and it's absolutely racist.
Well, I wonder, you know, I couldn't help but smile when they said that. My background's in philosophy, and I've studied the Greeks for many years and became more of an existentialist later in my life. But at one point I was, you know, I was deeply intrigued and into, you know, the works of Plato and Aristotle. And I'm pretty sure for all their issues, they would look at this and say, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is outside our ethical understanding, right? Our ethical worldview. The ancient Greeks themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And also, they read history in their way to fit their worldview. And yeah, it's really crazy and it's really scary. But still, I think in Greece it's important for all of us, because you see this happening in different parts of the world, all over the world.
Absolutely.
All over the world. But the thing about Greece is, in Greece, you have the unemployment is higher than most places, and the economic crisis is worse. And then you get this huge Nazi party it's so extreme. And I think we can learn something because it could happen also in Norway. Norway is a rich country today because of the oil. But the day the oil is finished, we will probably have economic problems, and then we could have the same kind of movement growing in Norway as well.
Håvard, I was really struck by, I think it's the, is it the grandmother? Is it Uriana's grandmother, possibly?
Who
says at one point something to the effect of, and it's a fascinating, you know, love. She's having a conversation with her granddaughter about love, I believe. She says, you know, what's the line? Love is above all, and something. I mean, almost right out of the Christian New Testament, for heaven's sakes, you know, love doesn't let you do bad things. And how do we? I mean, I think to some degree, all of us as humans, we live with these deep contradictions of good and evil and love and hate and so on. Did you come to terms with that at all while you're making the film, during the editing process, or even now? I guess as you step into the, you know, hot docs coming up soon and Q&As around the world, I mean, these are the questions people are going to be asking, it seems to me. But where did you land on some of that stuff? How did you come to terms with that?
So about love or contradiction?
Yeah, the contradictions. I mean, how does a woman, on one hand, talk about Jewish conspiracy, this deep-seated racist sort of ideological worldview, and yet then say, oh, by the way, love doesn't let you do bad things.
Yeah. No, it's very important to understand that in their worldview, it's not evil what they are doing. They really believe in what we say is very difficult to understand. For them, this is the world, how it looks like. Conspiracy theories, for them, the truth. And in their worldview, this is the war, and they fight for the kids. So it's about love, and so for them it's easy.
Håvard, isn't it? It's kind of, and I think you show this really well in the film. It's about love for a particular group of people, right? It's about love for them, and I guess as long as we stay, you know, closed within our borders, as long as we exclude others and we don't let, you know, those people in, kind of, that's love.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
love for, I guess, love for our families and the people that are closest to us. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. But the problem is, that's one thing, but it's not only that. It's also the willingness to be violent against others. Because they are into violence.
Yes.
And that makes it even worse.
Well, this is the extreme nature of it. I actually don't know how you were able to get that kind of access and the stuff, some of the things that bubble to the surface in the conversations are just utterly remarkable to me. And you just did they actually just say that? You know, I think at one point in the film too, you have them. There's a very informal conversation. You're having a chit chat, and I guess the camera was rolling clearly. And they say something. I think it's Jenny says something like, "Okay, we're not talking about the past anymore. We're done. We're done talking." You know, it was just kind of funny to me.
Because at that moment, I tried to talk to them about the murder of Pablo Fita. It's a rap artist killed by a Golden Dawn member. And that's something they really don't want to talk about. And then they started to talk about everything else and try to distance themselves from this problem. They don't. So, and that's like an example of how they try to control the film. And that's why it was so important to include that, because it's the film is more or less like a tug of war between me and them.
Right.
Who is telling the story?
They're trying to tell a political story of hope for Greece. And you're trying to tell this more, this global sort of critique of ideological and hatred, it seems to me. Hovart, were there any moments where you felt like in some of these interviews, these, you know, what does Arianna say? She studied psychology, right?
Yeah,
she said, I remember talking about kitties and doggies. I love kitties and doggies, but basically ultimately she says, I don't like people. Right. I like my dogs and cats, but I don't like people. Were there crazy statements on one hand and yet not so crazy on another? But were there moments of hope for you at all? Like, did you see, okay, maybe, just maybe I can win this argument this time, or maybe I'm getting through with some of these questions that I'm asking? You know?
Yeah, no. To be honest, they are so clever. They are so clever, so it's really hard to win an argument. They always know what to say. If I confront them about the violence, because you can find a lot of video clips on the YouTube with a man beating immigrants, or one clip where they are beating another politician or beating the mayor of Athens or a small girl. It's a lot of evidence out there. And when I confront them with this, it's always a reason. Somebody else has the responsibility. When they were beating this politician on live TV on this political debate,
yes,
they explained
outrageous.
And then I asked them, is it correct to beat a woman? And then they say, oh, she was lesbian, so she's not a woman. And it's always this kind of stupid argument, but they believe it, and that's their worldview.
So what do you think will be? And you've probably, as you said, you've already screened it and so on. But as you come into Hot Docs in the next couple of weeks here in Toronto and so on, what do you think the more global reaction will be to your film and to this movement coming out of Greece? I mean, I think there's an understanding that all over the world, the U.S. and parts of Canada and so on, there's this sort of nationalistic rant that's going on, and it seems to be more evil, I guess if we can use the word evil in some places than others, but it clearly is dangerous. Was that one of your hopes as you were sitting through, you know, the editing process going, wow, this is not just about Greece. This is not just my story about Greece and about racism and hatred. There's some lessons to be learned here for the whole world.
Yeah, I always make films where I try to learn something about the human beings behind, and so it's not mostly about Greece. It's about these people and trying to understand this kind of people. So I, unfortunately, during the process of filming, that subject were more and more relevant, more and more important. And our distributor said, "Oh no, you have to finish the film because it's all over the news." And then, oh sorry, we have to wait one more year. And then. A year later, it was even more relevant. So it's, of course, it's good for the film, but bad for the world.
Right. Wow, interesting. That's quite a soundbite. Good for the film, bad for the world. I talked briefly about hope. It sounds like you have, you know, as you watch the film, you clearly have a sense of humor and have deep irony. Are you in a sense hopeful about this? Is this a Are we going to look back on this and say this was a bit of a blip in history, a little bit of a right-wing, racist, fascist kind of blip, or are we heading in a really, is this taking us into a downward spiral spiral globally?
That depends on the day. Some days I think it's just the beginning, and other days I feel so. But yeah, in one way, I'm not that scared of Golden Dawn, for example, because they are so. It's so easy to see the Nazi politics and the symbols. But I'm more scared about politicians who are more clever, who are hiding their fascist ideas. And for example, in Hungary now, where this Orban is elected, people who look like normal politicians are more dangerous, I think.
So the ones who aren't actually coming out and saying, I mean, this is in your face, Golden Dawn girls, it's pretty easy for most of us to look at this and say, these are extremists. Yeah. You're more concerned about the subversive stuff going on around the world.
Yeah, I am. But still, I think I'm hopeful because people are educated. Most people are educated. We know history, and that's the same in Greece as well. I don't think Golden Dawn could be much bigger than they are now because Greek people are educated.
And was it your sense that people were, I mean, you do show some of the reaction against Golden Dawn and sort of this right-wing extreme political thinking. Is that a significant, is that group significantly present, you know, on the streets actually protesting against, or is it a small group of people, would you say?
No, it's a lot of people who fight against Golden Dawn in Greece. Most Greeks hate Golden Dawn, and that's very important. But I think also the problem is that Greeks are getting used to it, and I experienced it myself, because in the beginning when I started the project, I was really, when I entered these meetings of Golden Dawn members, I was really shocked. I was shocked and sad, and but after a year shooting and being in this party, I heard myself whistling on their melody in the middle of all these people chanting, and that's so crazy. You get used to the worst kind of people. You get used to this kind of rhetoric, and that's scary.
It is scary. It's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, the things that we all go through, right? The lifestyle advertising, the messages that are communicated. I mean, what is it actually doing to us in the long haul? And this, again, another reason why I so love your film, because of the questions that it actually raises. You know, how do we make those distinctions? And this is where it's fascinating, too, because it's a deeply philosophical film, and it's really quite marvelous that it's rooted in Greece. So, you know, just from that whole sort of, you know, because we, Plato, Aristotle, I mean, you know, somebody, I think it was Alfred North Whitehead who said, all of history are just footnotes to Plato. So if that's true, I think you've added a few more footnotes here, and I think that's a remarkable thing, and it added to this conversation about racism and hate and the spread of it. You know, so if we could, we're going to have to wrap it up in a couple minutes here, sadly, Hovard, but I wanted to ask you, maybe because you kind of end the film with the baptism sequence and this big question mark about raising children, you didn't get to make the film that you really wanted to make, but in a sense, aren't you still communicating the same message? And that's one question. And then the other question would be, how do we avoid doing the same things with our own kids?
Yeah. So the last question, of course, we transfer our worldview to our own kids. We do it all the time. But hopefully we are transferring more good ideas about love and about not about hate, of course. But I'm also curious about our own black spots. What is our black spot?
Right.
And that's a difficult question. It's not so easy to see your own black spots. So that's the hard question.
By black spot, do you mean just our own, where we cross the line, or do you mean kind of like that expression blind spot, where we can't actually see?
I mean more like what are we doing I think it's something about the environment.
Yes.
We do things that are really bad, but we don't see it. We go to bed and sleep, and we live our lives, but there are things that I think people in the future will say that, how could we do this? How is it possible to this kind of things? And we transfer this kind of ideas to our kids too, so that's not good.
No, it's absolutely not good, and I think again, the whole idea for me of and if I can just bring it back to the Greeks and philosophy, I mean, isn't it about asking better questions, and isn't that the role of a great documentary and a great documentarian, to ask those deep questions to keep us honest and to keep us reflecting on these things that matter?
Exactly. And that's one of the things in this film that is really important to me, is to show that these women in this fascist party, they are not, they look like us.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And it's not like only skinheads. So it's something about the banality of evil, like right. Hannah Arendt has talked about, and I think that's important too.
Well, it's absolutely remarkable how at the end of the film you finally kind of Rihanna, you finally sort of really in a black and white way confront her, and she's just not interested in even having the conversation, and it's deeply unsettling and disturbing and all of that, and I think it's a reminder to us all that we need to continue to be open to other people's ideas and what do we really mean when we say love? You know, these are big questions. It's a fascinating film. I hope everybody gets to see it. It's an important film, and thank you so much for making it, for taking the time. Hey, one last question just before we go, if you don't mind. I couldn't help but sort of insert myself into the film a little bit, and I love that from your POV perspective that allowed me to do it as a viewer. Were there times when you were kind of scared for your life at all? I mean, it certainly seems like things were getting a little out of hand from time to time.
Yeah. Especially in the beginning, we were really afraid, because we were warned that this part is really dangerous against journalists. But we weren't threatened. We had like a tear gas grenade exploding some meters away from us in one situation, but I think we were pretty safe. What we did the first time we entered this Golden Dawn meeting, I borrowed a black metal T-shirt from the producer to blend in.
Funny.
So that's a strategy, and it worked. So,
That's funny. Well, that's a nice little clue for people, I think, because I think that comes up right at the beginning of your film, and we won't tell our listeners why that's an interesting clue, but nicely done. It's a nice way to subvert the room as the journalist. That's hilarious. Håvard Busnes, today with me on Face to Face, we're talking about Golden Dawn Girls, coming up at Hot Docs in the very near future. Håvard, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate the film, and I so
thank
appreciate
you,
your honesty and your openness to chat about some of these things in greater detail.
Thank you so much, David. It's a pleasure.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.